Beathard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith. Ah, he got it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards, Iowa!
56-yarder. Does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it to the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Don't miss a thing from the world of college football. Stay right here for College Gridiron on WFUV Sports.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome inside of the Rose Hill Studios here on the campus of Fordham University. We are so back. I'm so happy to be back in the studio. Tucker Austin today, joined by Brendan Shorey, Jack Warner. We've got Thomas Tisdale behind the board for us today, and we've got some semifinals to get into.
Thank God for no more
We've
Zoom.
We've got a national. Yeah, thank God for no more Zoom, dude. It's so much better to
it's
be
better
in the studio.
It's better than nothing, but like, it's still just when we can be in the studio and not like have the possible like internet delays or cutting people off because you're not sitting right in front of them.
Yeah.
Like after the first week, I'm like, you know what? I'm glad we have this to keep the show going over breaks. But then after like two episodes, I'm like, we need to get back in the studio yesterday.
Yeah. So happy to be back. And I guess we'll start it off with just like some checking in on everybody. Jack, how are you doing?
Oh no, we're not starting with me. We gotta start with Mr. World. We gotta start with Mr. Worldwide, Mr. 305.
Yeah, let's go
over
with Short because he just got back from abroad. Mm-hmm. Brendan, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm so excited to be back. I had a great semester over there in London, but the one thing I was missing is coming in and talking sports every week, and that's just something I couldn't do over there. So I am so excited to be back here in New York, back here talking college football, NFL, whatever it may be today, college football, though, and I'm just so ready to get into this.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you were able to do one of the NFL London games for FUV, correct?
I did. I covered the Jets-Vikings game in London.
How was that?
Awesome.
I'm sure it was sick, right?
It was so cool. I mean, covering a game just in general is such a cool experience.
Was it at Wembley?
It was at, I think it was at Tottenham.
Okay.
But yeah, so it was like whole new environment, like going into a stadium I've never been at before, and it was... I mean, all the amenities, they do it different over there in London. The press box is normally, like, up at the very top, right? Mm-hmm. It was lower bowl, 50-yard line.
Wow.
I had some of the best seats in the stadium that I got for being a member of the press. I was 10 feet away from Jared Allen when he was blowing the horn and doing the skull chant for the Vikings.
Nice.
Incredible atmosphere. Vikings fans traveled very well for that game. Awesome experience.
Yeah,
awesome,
they tend to do that. The Vikings fans are pretty good at getting around. Unfortunately, their Vikings couldn't get it done in the playoffs for them this year again.
Yeah,
as usual.
But I was about to say, even the rescheduled game in Arizona, for obviously because of the tragic wildfires in Los Angeles. The apparently what I heard from people who were there, like analysts and stuff, was that even though they tried to keep it like a Rams home game with the field paint and keeping the game on the West Coast, I think they said the stadium in Arizona was majority Vikings fans.
Wow. So, I mean, credit to that fan base, but that's neither here nor there. It belongs in NFL Friday.
Right.
This is the college
Those bozos.
Iron, guys. So let's jump right into it. The CFP semifinals were last week. We previewed them on the show last week. Jack Warner was there for that with me. But the Orange Bowl last Thursday, Notre Dame 27-24 over the Penn State Nittany Lions. My Irish got it done on a last-second field goal. Certainly not not exactly the game you would want as a fan if you're trying not to have a heart attack or maybe some high blood pressure.
Or a few.
Yeah. But, hey, you know, Steve Angeli from out of nowhere, from Bergen Catholic, I believe, in New Jersey. So another Jersey native. He wound up being the difference because he came in for Riley Leonard in that second half, at the end of the second quarter when Riley Leonard got a little banged up. Angeli comes on, and with Notre Dame not really getting much done in that first half offensively, he moves him down the field and gets him 3 points to go into the half. They wound up winning by a field goal. You know, if Steve Angeli doesn't move them down the field in that second quarter, Mitch Sheeter's probably kicking that field goal to tie and go to overtime. And with Penn State's defense playing the way that they were, I don't know how confident I would have been in Notre Dame going to overtime there, but Notre Dame got it done. Mitch Jeter with ice in his veins, man.
What a kick.
Oh, just a beaut of a kick, and Marcus Freeman is so confident in him.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I do want to touch on Steve Angeli for a little bit more, because one of the things that I think was also he's not getting enough credit for is that it was his drive that was the first points on the board. Like, I think a lot of people are talking about, like, oh, if it was, you know, they got them this amount of points, so at the end of the game, it was a tie instead of a game-winning field goal, which is very important. But the other thing to keep in mind is Riley Leonard, who obviously turned on the Jets in the second half. In the first half, Notre Dame couldn't figure it out. Penn State was suffocating them. So for your backup to come in after such kind of a back-breaking thing to see, like, obviously we didn't know the severity of Riley Leonard's injury when he left the field, but for your backup to come in and lead the first drive that gets you points in the whole game, he's the one that breaks the seal against this Penn State defense that in that first half looked absolutely phenomenal and suffocating. I think that is also just so impressive and such a plus to see from, you know, again, a backup, you know, stepping up in that situation.
And before I even get into Angeli, it's fun fact about him, actually. So I was watching this game in a hotel room up in Tuckahoe while I was in the process of moving into my new apartment. And I had gone to the bathroom during commercial, and I come back, and I see a text on my phone from one of my friends. He goes, "Look at the Notre Dame quarterback. I went to high school with this kid." Says he was boys with him back in high school. So we look and we watch this kid come in behind in a game against a great Penn State defense and do something that Riley Leonard hadn't been able to do up until that point, which is move the ball down the field, actually get some yards against Penn State defense and go and get those 3 points, which going into the half was huge. It was a little bit of momentum. Right. It was a little bit of a, hey, like, we're in this game. We can actually do this. We can move the ball against this defense. They aren't just going to stop us all game. So him coming in that situation and being able to do that was not just a huge factor in the scoring, but also in that momentum and showing that Notre Dame team, it's a little morale boost for them.
And everyone in that building knew it, too. Like, when I think it was either coming out of the half or going in, I think it was going into the half, James Franklin got interviewed in one of those quick, like, high and by, like, coach interviews on the field. And one of the things he said while trying to analyze, granted, he was very positive about the first half that Penn State had, which he should have been. They did have a great first half. But one of the things he said right off the bat was, that was a huge 3 points Notre Dame just got. They're about to get the ball back. That was huge for them. Like, he acknowledged it himself and said, you know, I think he was already analyzing, like, how Notre Dame is going to come out in that second half, coming off of finally getting on the board right at the buzzer, not being down 2 scores anymore, and getting the ball back at the second half. Everyone in the building knew how much of a tonal shift just getting that drive down the field and getting that field goal was, just those 3 points.
Yeah, it was a game-tying swing with that field goal and then double-dipping with the touchdown at the start of the second half. They got themselves back into the game at that point. And then Penn State punched again. Notre Dame punches right back. How about Jaden Greathouse? What an incredible performance from him. In a season where we really expected more rushing attack out of Notre Dame, more often than not, we get a receiver with 7 catches, 105 yards, and a touchdown. His longest being the touchdown, a 54-yarder, where I would say that he stole that safety's ankles, but he kind of he took his ankles, he took his shin, all the way up to his knee. That safety got dusted.
Well, especially that final drive, that 3rd and 3 where Leonard throws an absolute dart and
how do you not think he's down. how do you, like, as if you're Penn State's defensive coordinator, you've got to be thinking Riley Leonard rush.
Right.
Yeah, you've got to be thinking Riley Leonard keeper.
That's what they've been doing all game too.
And he fires it on 3rd down.
And also 3rd and 3 throwing a pass that results in a gain of 10. Like, that's ballsy.
Their late game has just been so good. Like, but you go back to the game before this for Notre Dame with the execution late in the game, getting, like, they got the punt unit out there, and then, like, they managed, like, they got the opponent to jump offside late in the game. This time late in the game, they, like, cool, calm, collected after the interception, get themselves in position, make the right plays, and get Mitch Jeter his best possible look, and they did exactly that. And I also want to say that, like, last week I was really honing in on Notre Dame's ability to turn opponents over. They turn the ball over a lot, or force turnovers a lot They score a lot of points off of turnovers. They didn't turn Penn State over aside from the one interception.
Right.
But it came at the absolute best possible time.
It was
for
when
the
they needed
Irish.
It.
When they absolutely needed it most, they got three more points off of a turnover.
That was one of the things that I said last week on our preview show, is I said these teams are so evenly matched that it's going to come down to an enormous turnover that like was just a great play and you have to tip your cap to the defense, or a colossal screw up, which that's more the case with Drew Aller, which we'll get into in a little bit. But no, I had that sort of proven to me twice, because the pick that Riley Leonard threw, at first I was like, oh no, this is going to be the one that seals it for Penn State. And then, you know, Drew Aller throws that pick at the end of the game, like, oh no, that's the one that ends up sealing it. But yeah, when you Notre Dame, it's an impressive, because you mentioned it on the show last week too, which I thought was a really good point about they have an, it's almost part of their play style defensively for forcing turnovers. It's not like, it's not as much a luck thing with them. For some defenses, it's something that they luck into, is turnovers or capitalizing on a bad throw or doing whatever they have to do. But Notre Dame, it's almost become a part of their identity, is forcing turnovers. And I think seeing them go basically coast to coast in this game without generating a turnover, have the game set up to for them to win, they just have to get a stop, one final stop, up 3 points, and to end it on a diving interception was just so, it was so Notre Dame. It was so poetic.
And it's interesting, too, because Riley Leonard actually threw two interceptions.
That's
in this
right.
game.
Yes.
Drew Aller's one. And Penn State picked up 10 total points off of those two turnovers.
Right.
But it wound up being the turnover late, when you absolutely cannot afford to turn the ball over. Like, we should talk about Drew Aller now, because,
right.
Oh, man, like, the... Like, all across social media, all across, like, the professional media,
yeah,
this is, like, the cardinal sin of being a quarterback, throwing over the middle of the field late mm-hmm. in the game, like, as, like, a prayer throw. And, like, we were talking a little bit before the show, he was trying to get that ball on the ground. He didn't want that to be a catchable ball in any way, shape, or form. But, like, why are you trying to ground it between the hash marks?
Yeah.
Like, that's not where you throw that ball.
Well, we mentioned it too, is at that point you either throw it yards shy of that receiver. I want you hitting the ground 5 yards short of that receiver where there's no other defender within 5 yards of that, or you're putting that in the stands and taking the grounding, or you even go down,
take the couple yards loss and at least you get the ball away.
Like, at least the punt forces Notre Dame to do something.
Yeah,
you
like,
know?
You can't make a mistake like that in such a crucial time. If you're further down the field, understandable. If there's less time, understandable if you're further down the field. If you're trying to make a more risky throw to try and get your team into field goal range where there's not as big of a risk, where there's not as much time where Notre Dame can drive down the field. But with that much time left in a situation like that, you have to throw the ball away, take the sack, regroup, and come at it next play. You can't be throwing away an opportunity like that and giving it right to Notre Dame in prime field positioning.
It was like a full, to me, it just felt like a full 100 yards effort when all they needed was 40 or 50. Like, in that situation, you're looking to tie the game. You're not necessarily needing...
Or not even. At that point,
it was a tie game.
It was still tie. It was
that's right. That's right. I'm sorry. That's what's set up.
So they
that's
only
right.
needed that field.
That's right. I'm sorry. They're just looking to take it. That's right. They're just looking to take a brief lead. Like, that's all it is. You don't need that late in the game. You don't need seven. You need to force them to do. You need to force Notre Dame to make something happen.
You don't even need three.
Yeah.
You can sit on that and take it into overtime if nothing is there.
Right.
Yeah. If you really want to, just giving Notre Dame a chance here is absolutely worst case scenario here for Penn State. And
I'm still just so confused about trying to ground a ball between the hash marks. Like, there had to be I'm impressed with the ownership he took of it. Like, I'm glad that he owned up to it the way he did. I think that he did the right thing.
I feel like that grounding excuse is I feel like he came up with that after the fact.
Right. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, is like, I'm saying, I'm glad he said something to take accountability for it. But the other thing, I'm just, when you watch the playback, to me, it just feels like he saw something.
Yeah, I think he panicked and it collapsed last second
yeah. and he threw it anyway and it got picked. Like, I, to me, I don't know if I fully believe the grounding. I've never seen somebody try to do that. Like, it almost takes more effort to try to successfully ground a ball in front of you rather than to the sidelines. Like, it just, it's nothing you ever see.
That ball was too close to the receiver on an off-platform throw
right.
for that to be an attempt to throw it into the ground.
Right. Yeah, no, like, pretty sure he was trying to get that to his guy. Like, but it was also, like, an emergency fourth option. If you, like, when you watch the playback, you can see him go through every progression, but, like, panicking because it's all covered. And like, and they wanted to go to Tyler Warren, but he was locked up.
Right.
He ran an out, and he was like, his receiver was stuck to him at, or his corner was stuck to him at the hip.
Right.
And so he's like, oh, our best option's not there. Panic mode. Second option, third option, fourth option's open. Go. And then here comes. I think it was a safety who came across.
I couldn't even tell you if he looked at the fourth option before throwing it.
Right. Yeah. No. He may have just fired it to the fourth option, hoping.
I will say that while we continue to sit here and knock Drew Aller, which I think is deserved, obviously it was a bad play, but what a play from Christian Gray, though. Like,
yeah.
The fact that he was able to lay out and catch that, like, that, the fact that, like, that wasn't just a hit him right in the chest, was able
no, that,
to
that
seal,
was
it,
a very athletic
seal it and sit down type play. If he doesn't catch that ball, there's still more chances for Penn State. Who knows what happens?
And that goes back to the Notre Dame defense discussion we just had, where those takeaways are their identity, and that's the culture that Marcus Freeman has built there, and that is why they're such a scary team, is because their defense is able to make plays like that and make those hard interceptions and force those fumbles and punch the ball out, is that those plays are what defines Notre Dame as a defense.
Yeah.
The other thing I will say, I just mentioned that we're bashing Drew Aller. I will say his wide receiver core was practically useless.
Yeah.
I believe they didn't catch a single pass the whole game.
No, and I think he targeted wide receivers, I think, 5 times.
He
didn't even throw to them that often. He went 0-for-5, and one of those was a pick.
Right.
So, like, his tight ends 8 all game.
Right.
They had a great game.
He didn't get much out of either of his wideouts. And then, I don't know if you saw this, on the last day of the 5-day transfer window, they both just announced their intent to transfer.
Both wideouts. I mean, catch the ball, guys.
Create some separation.
Yeah.
But still, Penn State definitely has some work to do in the offseason in terms of the transfer portal, trying to put a team around Drew Aller, because he is coming back. He will try to prove himself to us again in college.
And I think that year just bought James Franklin some time. I really do.
Oh, yeah. They had a much better, like, finish to the season
than
they've had in the past few years.
Yeah.
I mean, the playoffs certainly helped with that. But, yeah, like, this is a very respectable way to go out if you're a Penn State fan or if you're Penn State. You know, like, that's plenty of there's plenty of upside and there's plenty of future there, plenty of pull in the transfer portal for people to come there. But this go around, it was Notre Dame who had the last laugh. Once again, it was 27-24, the Fighting Irish over the Nittany Lions. Notre Dame's defense is playing great. They just need to keep doing it. But we move to the Cotton Bowl now. Last Friday night. Sorry, Shorey. I know your Longhorns unfortunately fell to the Ohio State Buckeyes, 28-14. It's a gut-wrenching loss if you're a Texas fan, I can't lie. Or if you're an OSU hater, which I think that everyone at this table has some a little bit of
a
little or a lot of hate for OSU. But yeah, I mean, the whole storyline. I think if you're a college football fan in general, I think it's hard not to love the story of Jack Sawyer and Quinn Ewers and, like,
yeah,
roommates at OSU, Quinn Ewers transfers, they meet in the semifinals, Jack Sawyer strip sacks his old roommate for 83 yards to go to the house and seal the game. But again, that's really painful from the Texas side. So Brendan, I guess we'll start with you for this one. Like, how are you feeling, like, watching this game?
I can respect the story between Sawyer and Ewers. I can't like it, I'm not gonna lie. I was hopeful, and I came into this game hopeful. I thought Texas matched up better against Ohio State than Oregon or Tennessee did. Tennessee, I did not think was a good team. Oregon, I did not think had a good defense, and it showed. I mean, Texas came into this as one of the best defenses in the country, and they played that way for a majority of the game. I mean, that first drive Ohio State had kind of took my breath away. I was like, oh, God, we're in for a long game here. But after that, the Texas defense, Texas offense bounced back, kept it close up until that last drive, which was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I really did think we had it. I really did think we had it. And I know we're going to talk about it, but the play call on second and goal from the one was atrocious.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
You cannot run a pitch. You absolutely cannot run a pitch there.
Yeah, I was really confused watching that play.
Everyone was.
You're giving up. They gave up so many yards backwards from so close. Like, you just got to try and punch that in. Like, even if you get, like, stopped, like, you could at least maybe still get you want the touchdown there. You really do. It's probably four down territory. But I think, like, even with Ohio State's defense the way that it is, I think you still kind of, like, you have to try and go up the middle, because if you go to the outside, Ohio State's too fast on the edges to really give you anything. You're probably losing yards 75-80% of the time on that play.
Yeah, I think that this game was decided by two plays. I kind of group two of the plays together because it's technically three plays, but I'm going to group two of them together because it all kind of encapsulates one major screw-up. The one play being the combination of the failed pitch and the strip sack, and then Travion Henderson's 75-yard touchdown right before the half.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see plays like that very often where on a screen pass he's able to find the separation and get the proper blocks to take it 75 yards to the house and go into halftime on that note. I think one thing that's very true about both of these semifinal games is it came down to little moments. It came down to who showed up in big moments, who was able to make that one crucial play. And that's kind of that's usually what ends up happening when you get into these late stages of playoffs where these teams are so evenly matched. I thought that this game was going to be honestly more of a shootout than it ended up being. I remember saying on last week's show that I thought there was going to be a lot more offense than we ended up seeing.
Yeah.
And credit to, even though things kind of, well, actually, they scored a defensive touchdown, Ohio State did, at the end of the game. So I can't remember. Credit to Texas's defense, who I thought contained an Ohio State offense that for the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks of play has been the scariest offense probably in college football. Especially throughout the course of the college football playoff. But it just came down to a few plays. But I think it really did just come down to that botched, you know, starting first and goal on, what was it, the one or the two?
Yeah.
And coming up with on the receiving end of a strip six, and then that touchdown from Travion Henderson, I think, were the two plays that just really put this game away.
Oh, I 100% agree.
Yeah,
That screen pass was killer. I mean,
yeah.
30 seconds left in the half. You can't let them go down and score in one play like that.
They're on their own side of the field. There's 30 seconds. Some teams would have kneeled it into the half. So there's teams that no matter where they are in the game, it's the first half. Let's not do it. We're on our own side of the field. Let's not fumble and give them a field goal opportunity. Let's not throw a pick six. Let's not do anything. That was I'm never the one to give Ryan Day credit. I love that. Making a play call there. I've seen plenty of teams kneel it into the half in that situation. Not him. Not in a game like this.
I mean, that's generally known as a play call that if you pick up enough yards or if you get close to that first down, then you're going to go and try to get points. If you don't pick up a thing, if you pick up a yard or two, then you're just going to take it down to the half.
Yeah.
And we let them get 75.
Yeah, and it had potential to be even worse for, like, in terms of the whole game, because obviously, like, you get the 75-yard screen pass for a touchdown at the end of the half, and then OSU got the ball back
right to
start the second.
Like, what a swing.
So, like, that could have been a huge swing
right if
Texas didn't pick off Will Howard
exactly.
on the first drive of the second half.
Right.
Right there's your opportunity to swing yourself back into this game. But Texas ran four plays and punted. Like, it's kind of like there was a moment there where, like, there's another opportunity for Texas to maybe pull ahead and, like, put themselves in position to win, but they couldn't get it done. And it went back to, like, the first half punt show until it got down to the wire. I think Ohio State, they punched it in again. Who scored? Yeah, Quinshon Judkins again. Like, he had two touchdowns in this game, and they were both from within 5 yards, I believe, which is, you know, that's his bag. There's not really much you can do with him there.
Him and Trayvon, they were both very productive in this game. I think it was it was a combined. I think it was they weren't as effective on the rush as they were.
No, but Trayvon, like, he made up his lack of rushing with that 75
with that 75-yard touchdown. Yeah. So it didn't matter. But I think they had between them it was like 4 catches for like just south of 100 yards. I think it was 97 yards.
I'm pretty sure Henderson's only catch was the 75.
Right, which is crazy. Like, but yeah, I mean,
and I want to give credit to this Texas defense. I mean, Jack, you mentioned it, but they held one of the players who's regarded as one of the best receivers in the country, in Jeremiah Smith, to one catch for 3 yards, and it was on a little bubble screen. I mean, being able to shut down a receiver like that, and we saw him get targeted too. We saw Will Howard try to go his way deep a couple times, but Texas had a couple guys there in coverage, and they honestly were poor decisions from Howard trying to go to Smith in those situations. But taking Smith out of this game completely was the key to keeping this a close game, and we saw that throughout. And that's why Texas actually had the chance to come in and win this on their last drive. Huge kudos to the Texas defense for taking Smith out of this game. Because he had his way with Oregon. He had his way with Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
He could do whatever he wanted out on that field. Not against Texas.
Yeah, but, you know, like, other side of the ball-wise, I almost saw the writing on the wall for this Texas team all year, because I had seen the Texas offense struggle at times. I always go back to the regular season game against Georgia, where they just kind of couldn't solve anything that Kirby Smart's defense was throwing at them.
Yeah.
And I said last week on the show, I said something vaguely similar to this, that if Texas can't afford to take half the game off against OSU like they did against ASU.
Right.
They basically took the second half entirely off. ASU comes all the way back, but then they still get it done in overtime.
They're so lucky they didn't lose that game. I don't think enough people talk about that. That, like,
they left
away.
The door wide open for ASU to steal that one.
They should not have won that game.
Oh, I 100% agree.
But and then, like, kind of a similar thing happens here where the offense pretty much just went entirely quiet in the first half, aside for the one touchdown they managed. But Ohio State punches them right back before the half. That doesn't help. Second half goes fairly similarly, and they can't get anything going. And then, like, you look at what happened in the inside the red zone. The offense, that's a complete implosion offensively.
There are so many different. I was so mad in the moment about that play call. I mean, you think about...
Yeah, we need to talk about that.
You think about this Texas team and what they have, right? You're sitting... You just got two pass interference calls in the end zone. Your first and goal on the one. So your past two plays were both pass attempts into the end zone where the Ohio State corners could not keep up and held your receivers. So what's option number one? You throw the ball. Quick slant, quick fade. Golden had been having his way for the parts of the game that he was actually playing, aside from his injury. Give him something quick to go up and try to catch. Number two, run the ball up the gut. It's first and goal, second and goal. Do whatever you have to. Just run it up the gut 4 times. Worst case, you turn over on downs on the one, and Ohio State has to get off the one.
Yeah.
Third option, Arch Manning. Put him in the game. You have an option now. You can run the ball up the middle with Wisner or Blue, but it also keeps that quarterback option. If he sees the DNs crash too hard, he can pull it and take it around the outside. But Sark did none of those. He pitched it, and we lost 7 yards off of it. It's just an atrocious play call.
I kind of, like, I don't want to say I forgot about Arch Manning, but, like, in the heat of this game, at the time, like, at the late portions of the game, I was no longer thinking about the scenario of, like, oh, maybe we see Arch Manning in a red zone scenario.
I was like,
this is Quinn Ewers' game, because it, like...
I was the,
like,
complete opposite.
Huge game.
I was the complete opposite.
When they moved
inside of the 10, I was waiting for Arch Manning. Because I thought, this is ultra specific, but I just think of this because, like, to me, this is the main highlight I think of when I think of Texas football this year. Like, one of the cooler ones that they had this year because of how much of a spark plug it was. I think of the game against Texas A&M in Texas, at Texas A&M, under the lights, where they move. It was a pretty hard-nosed game early on in the early stages, and it stayed a pretty hard-nosed game for the rest of the game. But
Texas kind of pulled away at the end, but in the early stages, it was really back and forth. And I think they it was like a second and goal, a third and goal, and they brought Arch Manning out. He ran like a jet sweep, broke like three tackles, and scored at the pylon. They had to review it. It was like this sick play. It pumped up Texas, and it was like the first time that I was like, damn, like, because I always joked a lot about like Arch Manning making millions of dollars riding the pine and NIL and him being you know related to the Mannings and all this kind of stuff. I was like, when are we going to see that moment where like I actually put stock in this kid's future? And it was that moment against Texas A&M where they threw him out there. They were like, Ewers is not the he does not have the mobility to score here. Let's put in Manning. He runs in and scores it. So when that's kind of the association that I made with Arch Manning, is being that shifty, quick, inside the eight, inside the five guy. As soon as they moved within scoring, striking distance, within first and goal, second and goal, actually, when it was first and goal, they were on the 1 yard line, so it's you can't get any closer than that without scoring. I swore he was going in, and when they didn't, and they called that pitch, I was like,
Sark tried to get too cute. And if you want to get cute there, you throw Arch in. Defense expects run. You throw it with him, or you run him, put him right under center, and QB sneak it. You tush push that thing three times, you're gonna get it.
Listen, as a devout Boston sports fan, I was the beneficiary of a horrendous goal line call.
Oh boy. Yeah.
I say that to say calling a pitch there after experiencing being on the winning end of the Malcolm Butler thing. I said this to Brendan last night. We saw each other at the Fordham basketball game. We were talking about it. I said I would have trusted a quick slant there more than I would trusted a pitch. A pitch is the worst possible play call that you could have possibly made. I really do think so. Like, I know it's a bold take because you could throw a pick. I know they still had chances after the pitch failed.
It's not ridiculous in college, I don't think.
I would have trusted a quick slant more than that.
Defenders just aren't as they're not quite as talented as they are in the NFL. I'm like, surely there are defensive talents at that defensive back who could probably make like a Malcolm Butler esque pick on a quick slant. But more often than not, your wide receivers are fast enough to get a little bit of separation. And Quinn Ewers is going to put the ball right on target.
And Ohio,
so I don't even hate a quick slant option there.
Ohio State couldn't stop committing PIs. They had two.
Oh, yeah.
They had two on that drive.
Not only committing PIs, they were so committed to the run, too.
Right.
And when you run that pitch, you're trusting that your offensive linemen are going to get out there quicker than their linebackers who were already flying down expecting
run. They are so fast. Ohio State's linebacker group is insanely fast.
Right.
When they get a whiff of there being a run, they crash the line of scrimmage so hard. It's like it's better than any defense that
Fake
I've seen
the
in the
pitch.
League.
Well, and then even for Jack Sawyer to house that once he recovered it, still took a full foot chase down the sideline. Like, speaking to how fast they are, the linebackers,
that might be the fastest he's ever run.
It was a legitimate chase for the first 40-50 yards. You didn't know for sure if it was going to be a touchdown. Like, that's how fast these guys are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So regardless, I mean, really tough for
Sark, you're better than that, man.
Yeah.
A better
play
that,
call
man.
Could have been made there. But you know, again, I think they're in a very similar position to Penn State in terms of like upside, and going to the semis in the 12-team college football playoff now.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. No, like, I mean, semifinal exits in the past have been first round exits.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been like trashing teams that got bounced in the first round, even though it was a semi. Now we look at the semifinals and we're looking at losers as if they've made like a significant accomplishment, which I think we can say they have, because this is like, the 12-team playoff is a difficult path to a trophy, much more difficult than the 4-team playoff. And, you know, Texas had a lot of adversity that they faced. We talked about the ASU game already. Yes, they let ASU back into that game, and whether or not they should have won based on how they played in the second half, sure, the jury is still out on that, but I think it goes to Texas's credit a little bit that they managed to recollect themselves and put together an overtime that was a winning overtime.
Can I break some college basketball news on College Gridiron?
I
really
think so.
Quickly?
I don't think we have a college basketball pod. Or we might.
Storm the Court.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if we do that one that much.
Breaking. Fordham University is suspending men's head basketball coach Keith Ergo for 4 games for apparent recruiting violations.
What?
Wow.
Bombshell.
Okay, well, that was Fordham news, so that counts. That's like yeah. That's a cross podcast. Yeah. So
sorry, I should have said Fordham news, but yeah. It is technically college basketball news.
Wow, that's kind
of
weird.
On the heels of just such a thrilling destructive
game.
Loss, I know, but such a painful loss yeah. last night. That's yeah. just a tough blow. But yeah, Andrew Bogus just tweeted that.
Wow. All right. Well, there goes Ergo for four games with already four losses in the A-10 play.
No.
Five. Right. It's five. It's five now because of last night. But yeah, I don't really feel like talking about Fordham basketball anymore. Yeah. But anyway, Ohio State 28-14 for Texas. Ohio State Buckeyes get the win. You got one more thing for that
yeah,
game?
Yeah, before we move on, I just, as a Texas fan, thank you Quinn Ewers. He's declared for the draft. Mm. A lot of people like to trash on him. A lot of people trash on him throughout the season.
It was a good season for the most part. Great season. There were issues, but
and I just want to put it out there. A lot of people would blame this game on Ewers. I don't think it was Ewers' fault. I think he made plays down the stretch. He made those two key touchdown passes to Jaden Blue.
Yep.
And he saw the blitz coming and
getting,
he lofted it out there.
Getting strip sacked by Jack Sawyer is not his fault.
I don't think it was. I mean, Cameron Williams, right tackle, got. I mean, he
bodied.
Got swiped
yeah.
so quickly. Ewers had no time. He's trying to get rid of that ball.
And Jack Sawyer is a great player. Of course he's going to make, yeah. like, the best possible play he can make in mm-hmm. that scenario. With the ball in one hand, like, of course he's going to punch at it. Like,
yeah. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, yeah did Ewers play a perfect game? Absolutely the hell not. Anyone blaming that loss on Ewers did not watch the uh-huh. game. No. Did not watch the game.
Like, Texas was in the game yeah. for most of the game. The scoreline is absolutely lies about how this game was played.
Yeah.
Texas did not lose this game by two scores. It's just what it looks like because of how things played out. But anyway, yeah. Thank you, Quinn Ewers.
You were a dog.
It was a fun ride at Texas in
yes,
their first
was.
Year in the SEC. Went
SEC
pretty well. Went pretty well.
To the SEC championship.
Yeah, SEC title game appearance. I mean, that's pretty good for a first time in the SEC. I mean, they played well in conference play. It'll be Texas has they have plenty of future ahead of them in the Southeastern Conference, but not in this season. And finally, gentlemen.
Oh boy.
We've reached the FBS College Football Playoff National Championship game. God, it feels like I just started doing this season's worth of podcasts. I feel like it was just week one talking about Florida State getting bodied by Georgia
yeah.
Tech in Ireland. But here we are, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish versus the Ohio State Buckeyes. The more things change, the more they stay the same, guys. Brand new playoff system, 12 teams, crazy names in there we've never seen before, SMU. What are they doing in the playoff?
Arizona State.
Like, we had
Boise State.
All kinds of names. Yeah, Boise State. All kinds of names across the board, but we settle on two very, very storied programs between the Irish and the Buckeyes. They're going down to Atlanta.
Whew.
This is going to be a big one. This will feed many families. And as a Notre Dame fan, I got to say I'm both nervous and excited. I was nervous and excited for the Penn State game. I am freaking out over this game because on the one hand, I really think Notre Dame has a solid chance to take this to OSU, even though they're not favored in any way. I think Notre Dame, they have something in them with, like, behind Marcus Freeman, behind the culture he's built. They love playing for him, and he loves coaching them. It might just be like a power of team unity
right.
that gets them by OSU. But then on the other side, the Buckeyes are an absolute powerhouse.
They're a wagon.
Probably the most informed team out of any of the playoff teams. And they might be the best, like right now, they are the best looking college football team that has taken a field all season.
I mean, the flip since the Michigan loss has been unlike anything I've ever seen. I mean, they are easily the most terrifying team from start to finish in the college football playoff.
I think you guys lit a fire under them.
I mean, we'll happily take credit for it.
A win is a win.
If that's the route that you want to go, go blue.
But hey, how about this? This is two teams both with fuel losses. Because OSU, with the loss to Michigan, that's been fueling them in this playoff. And Notre Dame has been fueled by that Northern Illinois loss since week two. I know it's like it's kind of ridiculous to talk about, but Marcus Freeman has said in his interviews they have been using this game as their motivation for the entire season. He reminded them about that game before the Penn State game. He let his team know,
dude,
guys, do you remember how it felt to lose at home to Northern Illinois? You do not want to lose another game ever again.
To the point where I remember when they lost to NIU, there was headlines about how the NIU coach talked to Marcus Freeman about the weaknesses of Notre Dame to help him.
And they're still in contact, by the way. The NIU coach
and
Marcus Freeman. Yes, they've been like regularly communicating since. And they're boys now.
That's awesome.
It's really cool college football sportsmanship moment right there.
It's awesome.
From like a small pro and also just a humility moment from Marcus Freeman. As a coach of a huge program, you get upset by Northern Illinois. You have two options. You can either go the Marcus Freeman route and like try to learn everything you possibly can from that loss, get involved with the coach that you just lost to, figure out how he beat you, or you can just completely close yourself off like, oh, I hate NIU. That guy's terrible. We shouldn't have lost that game. Like, whatever. But no, Marcus Freeman took a different direction. And that's why his culture is different. Something about like the way he goes about his business, the way he treats his players, the way he operates late in games, just that like cool, calm demeanor. It's something about watching Marcus Freeman really makes me feel like Notre Dame is invincible sometimes. It's weird because I know they're not, but they feel like that sometimes.
And the players, they love playing for Freeman. They love playing for each other. And it's funny because you see players transfer into Notre Dame all the time, but you rarely see them transfer out.
Agreed. Yeah.
They have built something there that makes all these players, regardless of how much they see the field, that makes them want to stay and be a part of that program, be part of that culture. They are 100% bought in, and they are out there on that field playing for each other. And that's what makes this Notre Dame team so strong, is that bond that all these players have, and that they're not out there for personal reasons. They're out there to get business done for the person standing next to them.
And it's not just football either, you know, because like Marcus Freeman, for a long time, Notre Dame coaches would take their players and they would have mass before games. That wasn't the case in the Brian Kelly era. Marcus Freeman converted to Catholicism in 2022 and brought his team back to mass.
That's unbelievable.
Pregame. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish, the Catholic University in North America, they were not going to mass, but now they're back. And like
you
take the football unity side, you take like the character building side, you bring in the faith aspect to that.
Yeah.
It's creating just a completely different animal of a football team in the Fighting Irish this year. And even with Ohio State the way that they are and with the way that they're playing, because they are so, so good right now, I still really like Notre Dame's chances, because this is just this is 60 minutes for the rest of their lives.
Do you like Notre Dame's chances because you believe all that, or do you like Notre Dame's chances because you can't stomach the possibility of watching the Yankees lose a World Series and Notre Dame lose a national championship in about a 4-month span?
See, now you got me feeling like the city of Philadelphia during that stretch. You remember that little bit when the Phillies lost the World Series,
or when the Bills lost four straight in the 90s? Was it three straight? Four
but,
straight?
You know
four
that straight. That could be part of it, because I'm not going to completely ignore my bias. I know I'm biased in Notre Dame. I always think they're going to win Notre Dame.
It's better to go and lose than not go at all. So that's important. But here's,
I don't know. I'm still pretty salty about the Yankees loss.
I mean, yeah. But either way. No, the one thing that I really do like about, and I want to preface what I'm saying with this, as a passionate Michigan fan, the thought of Ryan Day makes me want to projectile vomit. Can't stand him.
Oh God, Michigan fans would not be happy watching him lift the national championship.
I think he's a crybaby. I think he has been obnoxious at every corner. So I'll get that out of the way now. I'll say it on my chest. I'd say it to his face. With that being said, this duel for the national championship fires me up, because looking at it as a college football, not as a Michigan fan, but as a college football fan, you had people
calling for his job 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, a month ago, whenever it was, a little over a month ago.
They wanted his head.
They wanted his head. They wanted his job. They wanted his address so they could send pipe bombs. Who knows? But you got to understand, hatred of a certain coach aside, whether it's you hate your own coach or you're a rival and you hate their coach, there's a special connection between players and the coaches that recruit them. No matter what, whether a team is down in the dumps or up in the sky, that coach took a chance on them and brought them to the school to play football. So those players for the last however many weeks have been, they had to watch Michigan plant a flag in the middle of their field and then listen to the world, the sports world, call for Ryan Day's job when they've lost like four regular season games in like 4 years.
Meanwhile, listening to the sports world like condemn them, or at least half of the sports world condemn them for fighting back against the flag planting.
Right. And I did that. But I thought that was soft. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
No, look, because I'm speaking objectively here. I am.
Yeah.
I have it. I do have it. I'm enough of a man to speak objectively about Ohio State. They've been playing, I think, for Ryan Day. I really do think they have. And whatever it is, whatever they've been doing, it's been working. Because, like I said, there hasn't been a scarier team over the course of the college football playoff. It's awesome, I think, going into this final matchup. As badly as I want Notre Dame to win this game, it is awesome seeing a matchup of, I think, two rosters that couldn't be more bought in on playing for their coach. Marcus Freeman being the way that he shifted the culture at Notre Dame and the way that he's brought that program back. Even though there was, you know, they brought it to new heights and changed things within the fabric that weren't, you know, in some more recent years just before him, were not previously there. And then on the other side of things, you got Ohio State, who I'm sure some of those players felt responsible for the discourse that was going on about Ryan Day, and they're playing for him. And that, I think, when you bring those two teams together to battle for a national championship, I think that's so amazing, and it makes for an awesome matchup.
I think it's time for game picks, guys.
Woo!
I think we got to make some picks here.
Yeah, we do.
I think I'm probably spoken for already.
Yes, you are.
But like from a technical standpoint, like I do think that I don't know if Notre Dame is going to be able to get their run game going that much, because like we've been talking about, the front seven for Ohio State is very fast, they're very physical, and they do not give up a lot of yards from close to the line of scrimmage. Notre Dame's probably going to have to open it up in the passing game a little bit, and Riley Leonard has shown that he's capable of doing that. Greathouse had a great game last game. Like, he should be able to work some of the passing game in there. Maybe that can open up the run game a little bit, but I don't think they're going to be able to establish the run early. That's why I think it's Notre Dame. Give me another fourth quarter turnover, and give me a Mitch Jeter field goal 39 yards away for the win.
Wow. So you're talking as time expires to win the national title,
yep,
field goal.
That would
They're
going to
do it again, because that's their bread and butter. It's been their bread and butter now.
Sick, man.
And I think, like, I'm not sure it's happened before in college because of the way college kickers work. Like, they're not as trustworthy super late in the game. You don't necessarily want to give it off to your kicker, but I would give it off to Mitch Jeter.
Yeah.
This dude has, like...
He's amazing.
This dude has Derek Jeter clutch.
Yeah.
Like, I've made, like, a tweet that, like, said something like that. It's like, I think I know another clutch cheater. Like, this guy reminds me of. But regardless, give me Notre Dame by a last-second field goal, Mitch Jeter from 39 yards away.
I'm very sorry, Tucker. as much as I hate to say it, as much as it pains me, I got Ohio State in this one. I mean, call me biased. I think the Cotton Bowl was the national championship. I thought whoever won that game was gonna win the national championship. I'm not super convinced by anyone coming from the other side. I think the win against Penn State was a good win, a very gritty win. But before that, you had the win against Georgia. Didn't convince me a whole lot. They didn't have a lot of offense. And I think that Georgia defense is comparable to this Ohio State defense. Notre Dame offense didn't really show up. If you look at how they scored, it was a kick return touchdown and a turnover forced in the red zone.
Yeah.
The offense on its own couldn't do a whole lot.
Yeah, but I mean, Notre Dame prides itself on scoring on turnovers.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's their whole defensive identity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they do that. But looking at this Ohio State offense, you got Emeka Egbuka, you got Carnell Tate, you got Jeremiah Smith. You can't cover all three.
And then you got to worry about Travion Henderson.
And then you got to worry about Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins in the run game. I think
and no Benjamin Morrison too.
Hmm.
I think the only way that you could beat them and the Ohio State's biggest weakness is Will Howard. I don't think he's all that as a quarterback. I think his ability to read defenses is a little suspect. He tends to make throws, at least from what I saw in the Texas game. He will throw into tightly contested windows and trust that his receivers make the play, which when you have a cast like that, you can kind of afford to do that. But I think the only way Notre Dame wins this game is if they are able to force Will Howard into multiple turnovers, because I am not 100% convinced by this Notre Dame offense. I don't think Riley Leonard, I think he's a good quarterback who gets it done when it needs to be done. But in a game against Ohio State, he needs to be getting it done all game long and not just turning it on late in the game.
Yeah.
And I think his rushing ability is a great part of his game, is fantastic upside. I think his passing, the passing part of his game needs to be a little better against his Ohio State defense.
Jack?
Whew. Having me go last is really something, isn't it?
No, I'm going to ask Thomas to jump in after.
Oh, okay.
You.
Good. Good. Pawn it off on him. Mm-hmm. I will preface by saying I hope I'm wrong. That's what I'll say.
Oh, I do too.
I hope I'm wrong.
I'm rooting for Notre Dame. Don't get me wrong.
I want to be on the airwaves, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere. Mm. I want you to hear me being wrong right now. Let's get that out of the way. With that being said, I do have Ohio State. I'll go 31-24. Ohio State wins. Either that or 20. It'll be by a touchdown, 27-20 or 31-24. I think it's going to come down to, as you mentioned, Brendan, I think Ohio State just has too many weapons. I don't think that they can guard every passing option that Will Howard has. But here's what I will say, and here's what I think are some of the things that need to happen in order for me to be wrong, which I hope to be wrong. Let me say that again. I hope I'm wrong. I think this game, given those weapons that Will Howard has to throw to, I do think this game is going to be won and lost for Notre Dame on the ground. If they can establish a run game, which is really hard to do against Ohio State, I think that completely evens the playing field and makes this a completely different game. Because I do think that they did kind of take that away from Texas in the semifinal. The other thing is on the defensive side of the ball, Notre Dame needs to be able to flood the gaps. Ohio State loves their run game. Majority of their run game is through the gaps, and it's like overwhelming. It's like over 70% of their run plays are through the gaps. They need to be able to flood the gaps. They need to be able to shut down their run game, which when it's on, it is on. Obviously, the semifinal game was much more of a through-the-air success for Will Howard. But I agree with you. I don't think he is as good of a quarterback as some. Doesn't mean he's not good. They're here for a reason. But I think this game is going to be won and lost on the ground if Notre Dame has a chance in this one to win it. But I do think Ohio State just has just a few too many weapons.
Wait,
for
do
Notre
you hope
Dame
you're wrong?
I hope I'm wrong.
Okay. Just had to make sure.
Desperately yeah. hope I'm
I
wrong.
I wasn't sure, so.
All right, so Notre Dame for me, it's Ohio State for Brennan, and it's Ohio State reluctantly for Mr. Warner. And Thomas Tisdale behind the board, who is your pick for the national championship game?
Look, I want Notre Dame to win so badly. I despise.
It seems to be the sentiment around the studio today.
I think despise. Everyone except for Ohio is going for Notre Dame.
Yeah. I know. I thought it would be worse because I thought there would be a lot more Notre Dame haters out there, but I guess a lot of people just hate OSU way more. But anyway, Thomas.
OSU is the most disliked team in the country. I mean, easily, hands down. I mean, besides Alabama.
Their coach makes it easy.
This is true. OSU is just is way more talented. My mind and my gut says Ohio State, but my heart says Notre Dame. And I think just because I want a feel-good story, I want Notre Dame to win. After that loss to Northern Illinois, they've been one of the best teams in the country. And OSU has just sort of been just like, I mean, that loss to Michigan was kind of pathetic, but after that, they've been sort of unstoppable. But I want Notre Dame to win, so I'm going to pick Notre Dame to win. But just because I pick Notre Dame to win, I think, oh, OSU is just going to win because I'm just cursed when it comes to picking teams to win. So give me Notre Dame to win 31-21. I think they're going to blow, or they're going to get off to an early lead in the first quarter, and they're sort of just going to coast all the way down. I think OSU can't play in big games, and so I think they're going to suffer.
Fighting words from Mr. Tisdale. That is electric. I love to hear it personally. I would do if I got to watch Notre Dame cruise to a national championship. That would be such a good change of pace for my sports recently. Oh my goodness. I mean, I'm
can't
still
play in big games. I love it.
Every time
damn.
I close my eyes, I still see Nestor Cortez grooving a fastball to Freddie Freeman.
Low
like
in,
it's
low and in.
Every
That's
time
what they
I close
That's what they
my
did.
Eyes,
like every single time they gave up a home run to him, it was like, you know what? Maybe every home run Freddie Freeman hits is on a low and inside pitch, but maybe this next low and inside pitch, maybe this next one in high stakes situations will be the one that he doesn't hit 600 feet.
The last one wasn't low and in enough.
Right.
We got to do it again.
Right.
But, like, you know what's insane, too? Like, the first thing after the ball dropped on New Year's, my sister was like, I can't believe we lost the World Series. And then I immediately just start. I got so angry. I was like, God, oh, my God. And I started, like, stomping around the room. This is 30 seconds into the new year, and I was already thinking about the Yankees losing. Yeah.
Hot start.
But regardless, it's Notre Dame. It's OSU for Shorey. It's OSU for Warner. It is Notre Dame for Thomas Tisdale. But, gentlemen, 60 minutes for unprecedented glory. Throw away all the stats right now. All the prior performances, none of that matters anymore. What matters now is who wants it more. Who is going to come out of the tunnel in Atlanta looking for blood? Who wants to win the most difficult to date national championship in the history of NCAA football? Both of these schools have great histories. But who of these two will stamp their name on this new chapter on the college gridiron? Find out, guys, Monday night, 7:30 p.m. on ESPN. But that's going to do it for us here in the studio today. For Jack Warner, for Brendan Shorey, and for Thomas Tisdale behind the board, as well as for our sports director here at WFUV, Bobby Chaffardini, I have been Tucker Austin, and you've been listening to College Gridiron, a production of WFUV Sports.